The show is recorded and produced by me, Bill Humphrey, in Newton, Massachusetts. Our theme music is produced by Stuntbird. Follow us on Facebook or at AFD Radio on Twitter. The show is not affiliated with any campaign committee, and each participant's opinions are their own.
This land is your land. This land is my land. California. New York Island. Redwood Forest, Gulf Stream waters, this land was made for you and me.
You're listening to Arsenal for Democracy, episode 387, recorded on Tuesday, July 2nd, 2021. I'm your host, Bill Humphrey. Joining me on the line from Idaho is Rachel. Hello, Rachel.
Hi, Bill.
So this is going to be our last bonus episode for the foreseeable future due to scheduling challenges. We've already talked to the patrons, and we'll be shifting to a $3 a month tier meant to help support the show, but it no longer made sense to isolate some of our really great content by making it exclusive, and we just decided we'll be returning to a once-a-week main feed-only schedule like we used to do, with the episodes generally being released on Sunday or Monday of each week. But we do have an interesting episode to close out our bonus episodes before we release all of our exclusive content to everyone anyway. And we're going to be talking about steam donkeys. So steam engines, as everyone who listens to this show knows by now, can be used for all sorts of purposes. The most famous kinds of steam engines in the First Industrial Revolution served to A, move a vehicle, such as a train, mine car, or ship, and B, power stationary machinery like a mill loom or a drainage pump in a mine or a ship. But there was also a third major use for steam engines at the end of the First Industrial Revolution, lifting and pulling objects with winches and pulleys. Rachel, could you explain what this looked like in practice?
Yeah. So this type of stationary steam engine is known as a donkey engine, perhaps in reference to their replacement of actual donkeys in some contexts. They originated in the mid-19th century on ships as a secondary engine, not for turning the screw propeller or paddle wheel, but for raising and lowering sails or loading and unloading cargo or supplies. Donkey engines were also later installed on piers for loading and unloading as well. They sometimes also powered the bilge pumps, and I assume probably sometimes hauled up and down the ship's anchor. These donkey engines allowed ships to operate with vastly fewer human crew members than older sailing ships had needed. And at some point, the fishing industry also realized they could use donkey engine cable winches to haul in fishing nets.
The innovation spread in the 1880s to the logging industry with a patent issued to John Dolbear of the Dolbear and Carson Lumber Company of Eureka, California in 1882. In logging, the donkey engines could be used to winch long ropes or wire cables to drag massive timber from deep in the forests of the Pacific Northwest to more accessible locations for sawmilling or transport by boat or rail. The engines could operate almost all year round, regardless of most weather conditions, and operate over much worse terrain than draft animal teams, usually oxen or horses, or even human teams could operate in.
And quoting from Coos History Museum's website, the editor of the May 1892 edition of West Coast Lumberman had this to say about the Dolbear logging engine. It weighs 8,000 pounds, and careful loggers state that it will do the work of 90,000 pounds of horseflesh. That is about 70 horses or 80 oxen. It yanks 10,000 or 12,000 feet of logs around apparently as easy as a politician makes promises. There are a goodly number of these engines of which the writer knows, and they are all doing satisfactory work.
Donkey engines became so ubiquitous in logging and relatively inexpensive for a company to buy that they were often abandoned in place when a timber harvest area was completed rather than bother packing them out, and many of them remain in the backwoods today, and you can visit them at various museums or trails.
Some donkey engines in logging could actually be moved around by putting them on a sled, hooking the winch cable to a destination point that couldn't move, and then hauling on the cable with the engine winch itself so that it moved instead of pulling something toward it. This was often used to move it further inland, or in some cases, the sled would be put on a river raft and the engine would winch itself upriver against the current.
The winch cables ended up getting so long as the cable manufacturing technology got better in the late 19th century, which is probably a topic for another episode, that the donkey engine operators had to use steam whistles to communicate with logging crews out of visual or shouting range, much like a tugboat, in an effort to reduce the number of deaths and maimings from the cable pulling taut suddenly. Today in the logging industry, air horns are used in place of steam whistles.
Donkey engines were also used along logging railroads to power vertical pulleys to load and unload logs or planed timbers onto trains.
Some of the steam donkeys in the logging industry grew to be quite elaborate in their heyday, with entire structures built around them to provide shelter for the engine operating crew, much like the cabin for a locomotive crew, except if you imagine an actual cabin in the woods being installed around the engine.
Steam donkeys were eventually succeeded by internal combustion engines and ultimately by diesel-powered tracked vehicles that could pull logs across difficult terrain and keep pulling to a final location rather than having to hand off the log to another winch cable when it reached the donkey engine. Until the 1920s, steam donkeys were usually wood-fired to generate steam, and employers finally pushed to implement oil-fired steam engines for the same reason railroads hoped to switch fuel sources. The ability to eliminate a fireman whose job was shoveling solid fuel into the boiler. But unlike steam locomotives on well-supplied rail lines, another specific problem for logging steam donkey engines in the backwoods was that they were not always near an easy source of rewatering for the boiler to heat up, and they tended to pose a wildfire risk in the middle of the valuable resource they were helping to harvest. So, the logging companies pushed past the oil-fired steam phase toward the internal combustion phase as soon as that was considered practical and cost-effective, albeit with some delays in the transition during World War II rationing periods. By the end of the 1950s, steam donkeys were gone from the logging industry.
And before we discuss some of the points that came up in the course of researching this, I wanted to take a side digression because I had noticed in a lot of the sources that they alluded to the use of steam donkeys in mining. So I wondered what that was about, because as we talked about at the top of the episode, obviously mines had for a long time used steam engines to do things like pump out the lower levels so that they didn't flood with water, that kind of thing. But apparently some mining companies, generally in the same type of areas that were heavy logging areas in the Pacific Northwest, so you would already have people who are familiar with them and companies manufacturing them to order, some of those mining companies found a utility for these stationary hoisting engines as well. Rather than dragging something, they were lifting, and in this case they were unloading heavy machinery from truck beds and rail flat cars. And I found a couple of sources that talked about that. They didn't get into too much in the way of specifics. So I thought about other possible uses, like maybe they were, if you had more sort of open mining, you could lift up and down the equipment. But I don't think that really happened because I don't think that was as common of a mining technique at the time. And then later, a lot of mining companies switched to hydraulics for their various lifting needs anyway, in which case that doesn't have anything to do with steam engines. Mines, as I said, had long had their own uses of stationary steam engines on site, including for drainage pumping and even sometimes elevators. Their technology tended to be off in its own category, with relatively minimal overlap with a lot of the other aspects of the Industrial Revolution after things kind of branched off at the end of the 1700s and into the early 1800s. And as I said, they used hydraulics for a lot of those functions, which is a completely unrelated technology. This is obviously going to be a relatively short episode, partly just because of the topic material, but I did want to have a little bit of a discussion here before we wrap it up. So Rachel, I don't think either of us had really heard of a steam donkey before we kind of got the idea to do this episode by seeing a reference to it. Interesting piece of technology, but what are some of the important takeaways or things that are particularly noteworthy about this technology and the timing of its adoption, especially by the logging industry, but earlier on by the maritime industry?
Well, one thing we were talking about before we started recording was just how kind of late in the Industrial Revolution timeline this technology showed up in. And our hypothesis is that the cable technology really had to be kind of the foundational factor in the adoption of the steam donkey. You have to have good, strong cable in order to winch these heavy, whether it's a cargo or whether it's lumber or any other resources or other machinery that you need to move around. You need to have a strong cargo or a strong rope, or else that just isn't going to work. Your rope's going to snap, your cable's going to snap, and you're right back at square one hauling things with draft animals instead, just because you need that cable to make everything work.
Yeah, and one thing that we haven't talked a huge amount is yet about, and we'll probably do some more episodes, is that sort of transitional period with steamships, where you, for a while, you had kind of a combination ship, at least out at sea, rather than talking about riverboats, where you would be, you know, sailing whenever the wind was favorable and only using your boiler-powered propeller when you just couldn't get any sort of sail power, especially because you'd have to be careful about how you used coal if there wasn't a coaling station available. And that's the type of engine that most people think of when they're thinking of a steam engine on a ship, especially in the mid-19th century. But again, in fact, it was this secondary engine that became the donkey engine that becomes the model for these other uses, whether it's on piers or then in the logging industry. And so you would have, you know, your main engine would be providing power to move the ship. And then you'd have this secondary engine that was much smaller that could do things like replace a lot of labor, replace a lot of human labor to raise and lower sails, adjust them back and forth, things like that. And so you could kind of get the best of both worlds, where you were making it easier to sail, but still not necessarily using as much fuel resources as you would need to just, you know, completely go under steam power the entire way. And you can do a lot of that stuff, like raising and lowering sails, with ropes, because that's already in use. But in order for you to then use it for other things, like using them on the piers to raise and lower cargo in and out of ship holds, or using them in the backwoods to haul logs around, you really need that very strong wire cable, because the original designs by Dolbear did use, for testing purposes, manila ropes and things like that, and those just didn't really hold up. And especially in the Pacific Northwest climate, you can imagine they would be rotting, things like that. They catch on something on the ground, it rips it up, that kind of thing. If you have quality steel wire cables, that's going to be a lot more durable. And so that is our hypothesis. We didn't see anything in the source material that indicated that one way or the other. And there are a couple of books written about steam donkeys, but we did not read those books. So they may address that, but that's our hypothesis, is just that you needed to get to a certain level of steel cabling for this to be really practical. Interesting as well, Rachel, I think that you see the elements once again of labor in relation to these pieces of equipment, right? Is it generating new jobs because it can suddenly do so much more, and therefore you can make enormous amounts of profit by hiring more people and scaling your operations up? Or do you have a situation where you're replacing labor? In this case, they were mostly replacing animal labor and expanding their operations, I think. But we also see hints of the opposite trend with the discussions around whether or not to go to internal combustion engines.
Yeah, that's something I was thinking about as well. I think we mentioned that aspect on our lumber and timber episode. Just the fact that the human labor was so abundant that the technology kind of wasn't needed for a while. And especially when the lumber was coming from the Midwest or back east and didn't have to travel as far. But once those forests were kind of clear cut and the lumber industry had to move west, then you were running into having to move your lumber a lot farther. And then you needed some more, the technology had to catch up to make that a profitable industry at that point.
Yeah. And this was, like you said, this was one of the aspects that we discussed on our forest products episode, that was a bonus episode that will be released shortly to everybody. But basically, yeah, the idea there is, like, for a while you can get by with just not needing the technology. And that's also something that we talked about with the American system of manufacturing on our episode with Kelly a few weeks ago, right? That one of the things that the Americans generally did, although not in this industry until quite late, was to replace laborers with machinery as quickly and as early as possible because there was a lot less labor available compared to the situation in, say, England. And so the U.S. technologically tended to advance faster and seek more productivity per worker rather than necessarily replacing workers. And in this case, we're seeing that this was sort of an outlier industry that finally starts to catch up, as you say, during the Second Industrial Revolution, and even late in that as well. I mean, we talked about a lot of the forest product stuff being in the 1890s. We see this development with the steam donkeys in the logging industry being in the early 1880s. And the Second Industrial Revolution starts in the United States in the late 1860s, or at the latest, about 1870. And that's obviously been a huge theme of our show over the past year and almost year and a half. So, yeah, those were some of the themes that I think jumped out at us while we were working on this episode. Any other additional thoughts, Rachel?
I would like to see a preserved steam donkey. There are several across the country. There's one at Humboldt State Park in Eureka, one at Point Defiance Park in Tacoma, Washington. And there's even one at Legoland Billund in Denmark. So I think it would be pretty interesting to see these displayed steam donkeys and see just the scale of their power and what they were able to do.
All right. Well, that's going to do it for our episode on steam donkeys. As a reminder, as we said earlier, we'll be just doing the Sunday-Monday releases of one episode a week. Open to everybody. If you would like to support the show, we will have shortly up on our Patreon a $3 a month tier. And again, can't really, you know, offer exclusive episodes. We'll probably try to do some, you know, cool and interesting content for everyone. But we just, you know, if you want to help support the show voluntarily, that would certainly be appreciated. You know, we're not making money off of the show particularly, but it helps offset some of the costs. And for those who have supported it and so on, you know, we really appreciate your support so far this year. We had a lot of fun making a lot of these bonus episodes. A lot of them were on these kind of weird, eccentric topics from the Industrial Revolutions, like the one today on steam donkeys. And, you know, that was something that you all made possible. And even just doing those bonus episodes encouraged us to think outside the box and come up with these kind of more creative angles on a topic that might otherwise be quite dry, you know, much like the conditions of munitions in an air-conditioned factory in the World War I era, which was something we talked about on another episode. All right. Well, Rachel, thank you so much for being on this week, and I will talk to you again when we next record our main feed episode this coming weekend.
It was good to be here.